Welcome back to episode 25 of In the Shadow of the Evening Trees. I'm Jennifer Von Ebers.
I'm David Von Ebers. You're talking that very fast.
That sounded really professional.
It did sound really professional. Should we do it again?
That was good.
You were very, very fast.
Right on it. This is a special episode. We were on a hiatus.
It's a quarter of 100 episodes.
Yes, which is a milestone in and of itself.
Yes.
We've been on holiday since the last time we aired.
Not exactly. I've been working.
Yeah, exactly. We've been back a week from our vacation to Ireland and had an amazing time. And then our daughter was home from college, so we also took last week off to spend time with her. As much time as she wanted to spend with us.
Yeah, and recovering from the trip. Recovering from a long trip.
Yes. Where neither one of us slept on the flight there or back.
That's true. So if you don't know, if you don't recall, we were in Ireland from about, well, we left Chicago on May 3rd and we got back on May 14th.
Yes.
So it was 12 solid days of traveling and being there and et cetera.
Yes. And we went to two different places in Ireland. Our first stop was Sligo.
Yeah, we flew into Dublin, got there on the morning of the of May 4th, drove, which was an adventure, drove about 2.5-3 hours up to the northwest coast in County Sligo, which is where my mother's family, is originally from.
Stunning.
Very beautiful.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. Driving was interesting.
It was, and I will say, though, for driving in a different country, navigating was not as hard as I thought it was going to be, because the signage is tremendous.
Yeah, they do have good signs. And the other thing is that there are basically just major roads between every population center. So if you're in Dublin, there is a two-lane highway, well, two lanes in each direction, that will take you pretty much anywhere. Like, there's one that goes up to the northwest. There's one that goes directly west. There's one that goes southwest, you know. So if you're going to Cork, if you're going to Limerick, if you're going to Galway, if you're going to Sligo, if you're going to Belfast, there's basically a major road that takes you directly from Dublin there. Although we did have, I would say, kind of a fortunate, we made kind of a fortunate mistake coming out of the airport, because we did miss one turn.
Yes.
We were doing fine.
So close.
So we were so close. We missed one turn and we ended up back in the city and in some kind of bad, like, stop and go traffic. They have horrendous rush hour traffic in Dublin, because the population keeps growing and there's more and more people coming in for all kinds of high tech jobs and so forth. So there's a ton of traffic. But in a way, it was good, because our car was manual transmission. We both drive manual transmission. We're used to it. We've done it for years. But we haven't done it lately.
Right.
And so nothing gets you back into the swing of things like stop and go city traffic on a weekday morning.
Although what we didn't anticipate, and we should have, is
a lot of things we should have anticipated.
The car was newer. We have a car that's new too, and when you get to a stop sign or stop, if you stop, it actually cuts the engine, and it just will start up again when you put your foot on the brake or whatever.
Right.
This car did the same thing, but every time it did that, we thought we killed the engine.
Yeah.
And we were trying to, like, you know, panic of, like, cars behind you, like, I need to start again and everything. And it's like, no, the car's still on.
Yeah. It took a while to figure out that was, you know, because, and actually, I want to say, neither one of us ever actually killed the engine for real.
We did not.
But yeah, so it's like, it's a, you know, our car at home is automatic transmission as a feature. You know, you see it in a lot of cars, there'll be a capital letter A with like a circle, kind of an arrow around it. And that's the feature that indicates the feature that will shut off the engine when you're at a complete stop to save gas. Our car actually tells you how long you've done it cumulatively.
Yes.
And how much gas you've saved while you've done it, which sadly is not much, but in any event.
Every little bit helps.
So we should have noticed that little sort of icon or whatever you want to call it on the dashboard, but we didn't at first. And the good thing is this car was stick shift. So if you basically just touched your foot on the clutch, it would start the engine back up very quickly.
Yeah.
So we figured it out, but it took a minute or two. The other thing, of course, is you're driving on the left side of the road instead of the right side of the road. So you're sitting on the right side of the car instead of the left side of the car. And that means you got to shift gears with your left hand, which, you know, if you're left-handed, that might be a better than driving in America, but I'm right-handed and, you know, you don't have the same dexterity with your left, with your non-dominant hand.
But I think we both caught on pretty quickly to that, because I pictured if we were in a jam, like I could try to shift while you were doing it, but that probably would have been even harder.
I don't think I could have managed. That's like a three-legged race or something.
Yeah,
like,
we're not sure an amazing race. It just
yeah, yeah. And the other thing is that, you know, once you get out into the countryside, you know, you're driving on roads that are like between 100 and 120 kilometers an hour. So you're going between 60 and 75 miles an hour, roughly. And so it's just like driving, you know, if you're driving a car with manual transmission on a highway, you know, you don't have to shift gears much. You're in fifth gear and you're just going. So that was
except we
fun.
Saw cows and sheep and horses
right.
and mountains and glorious scenery.
But the problem is, and when we went to pick up the car, they kept talking about we were standing in line so we could kind of hear the spiel that they gave to everybody in front of us picking up cars. And they kept talking about the roundabouts and you know, you got to be careful in the roundabouts and just go slowly and just watch, you know, the other traffic and make sure you're going the right way. And the thing is, you know, they really aren't that difficult to navigate, and the advice they gave was very good advice. But what the real trick was not just sort of going the right way around the roundabout and figuring out where you were supposed to head out of the roundabout. That really wasn't the trick. The problem is, I had this mental impression that all of these things were only in cities and towns, like not out in the middle of nowhere.
Yes.
So I figured, sure, if you're driving around in a city, you know, you're going 30, 35 miles an hour, you're going to have to go around a roundabout. But no, that's not just that. They're actually out in the middle of these rural areas. So you're driving, you know, maybe 60 or 70 miles an hour. And then the next interchange you come to is not like in America where there's an off ramp. It's a roundabout. And suddenly you're slowing down to basically zero. If you
making sure it's safe.
Making sure it's safe. And then, of course, the problem is when you get around the circle, you got to pick, you got to accelerate again to get back to 60 or 70 miles an hour. And the people who are driving there every single day, you know, they're used to this. And they may not be super patient with Americans who are struggling to to find, you know, second gear, third gear, fourth gear, fifth gear as you're trying to accelerate out of the roundabout. And on more than one occasion, I put the car in first instead of third because they were right next to each other, you know,
super
and
close.
Ground those gears. And then even if you get it right and you get it in third gear as you're accelerating out of the roundabout, then getting into fourth, sometimes you end up in second accidentally.
Right.
You know, and I think, too, that if I were driving a car designed for America and shifting gears with my right hand, I don't think that would happen. But anyway, it is what it is. Everybody drives stick shift there.
Yes.
You can actually rent a car with automatic transmission, but it costs you more. There aren't very many of them. And, you know, we wanted the challenge, actually. In a weird sort of way, we wanted
we
it.
We did.
The only, I would say, the other than, you know, grinding the gears a little bit in those kind of awkward situations, the only bad part of driving there is if you're in a small town, like a real small town out of the way, there are very, very narrow streets because obviously they weren't designed for traffic. And from our experience, and not even they don't believe in one-way streets.
Yes.
In the bigger population centers, those narrow streets are usually one-way, so at least you don't have to navigate around cars coming at you from the other direction. But in the small towns, they do. So we ended up, we drove up to Sligo. We made like one day trip on the side, and we kind of split up the driving. Like I would drive one way, Jennifer would drive the other. And we made one small day trip, and then we're kind of like, you know, cabs are good. So we ended up taking cabs everywhere after
that. Our personal cab company.
Our personal
basically.
Cab company.
Because basically what happened is when our first night, we decided, it was a 5-minute cab ride into town. we ended up doing that, obviously, so we didn't have to navigate where to park. It was hard to figure out where to park around some of these restaurants and things. And like David said, very narrow streets and everything. So they called us a cab the very first night when we went out to dinner. And that guy said, "How are you getting home?" And we're like, "I don't know." And he gave us his card. And that basically, we called him anytime we had to go somewhere. Yeah. So that was amazing.
The northwest of Ireland is really, really spectacularly beautiful. I understand if you're more like due west of Dublin, it's probably even more beautiful than it is in the northwest, but still, it's stunning. There's mountains everywhere. In the town of Sligo, which is very small, it's only about, I think we figured it was about 20,000 people.
Yeah.
It's a very small town. But, you know, almost on any street corner, if you look down the road, you can see mountains in the background. There's a famous mountain called Ben Bulbin, which is this long, flat mountain that stretches towards the ocean. Now, so the town of Sligo, there's a river that goes through it called, if I'm not mistaken, the Garavogue River. But the town itself is kind of on, the river goes through it, and then it's sort of on an estuary that's very, very, it's a big estuary. And so you're not really that close to the ocean when you're in the city. We took a cab to a town called Strandhill, which is where one of the main beaches mm-hmm. is. And I want to say it was a 15, 20 minute cab ride.
Yeah.
So even though you're on this estuary, when you're in the downtown area of Sligo, you're not, you can't really see the ocean from there.
Correct.
But you can from Strandhill, and it is stunning. I mean, it's beyond belief. It's some of the most beautiful scenery I've ever seen.
And as it happened again, we, for the majority of the time, had great weather. So it only rained a few times. And actually, the day that we went to Strandhill to the beach, we were sitting outside. We got lunch there. It was really, really cute. Lunch place, and there was picnic tables outside, and so as soon as we got our meal, the drips kind of start coming of raindrops and everything, and the next thing you know, there's an awning going out above us to cover us from that. It recovered, but when we were on the beach at some points, it did start to pour.
Yeah, and then so of course what you do when it starts to pour is you go to the pub, the Strand Bar, and you go in there and have a beer by the fire so you can dry out. I'm trying to find, I have a picture of the restaurant. Oh, it was called Shells.
Shells.
In Strandhill, Sligo.
Where I got fish and chips that were phenomenal.
Yeah.
It didn't stop us from, hey, we don't mind the rain. So we've trained for marathons and all different kinds of weather.
Right.
We don't care about that. We had our umbrellas, and at one time, the large beach, David and I were the only ones on there, so that was kind of fun. The only hard part was getting down to the beach was huge rocks that were became more slippery as the rain did that, so that was kind of like we had to be careful navigating that. But once we went in the bar and then it kind of dried up a little bit and then went back outside, it was beautiful again, blue skies and sunny, so that was phenomenal.
And it was an excuse to go to the bar and have a beer while we dried up.
It was.
Yeah, it was really great. And then we also, we got to keep an eye on time because we don't want to miss the most important part of the trip. But we also, we went to this exhibit, this wildlife sanctuary, raptor sanctuary called Eagles Flying.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw some cool birds. And we got to hold some cool birds.
We got to touch an owl.
We got to pet an owl. Well, two really, right?
Yes, because that white
you
snow.
Held the barn owl.
Yes.
And then they brought the big, huge horned owl over and we got to pet it. And I held
it was very soft.
Falcon. I actually have some notes on it. A lanner falcon, which is not, if I understood correctly, is not native to Ireland. It's actually an African falcon. But this place, Eagles Flying, is kind of a sanctuary for all kinds of raptors. I was a little disappointed. They have these hawks that are called Harris's hawks that are gigantic, much bigger than like red-tail hawks, which are pretty big. And I was kind of hoping we'd be able to get to have one of those come and land on our arm or something like that.
Yeah.
They brought one out. It was beautiful. And they also brought out a golden eagle, which was just like huge and beautiful.
And it had like a little bleacher area. It was outside. And when the person started to talk about it and what we can expect and things like that, he asked for two volunteers. I literally was ready to raise my hand in like 2 seconds.
But you have to tell the background. So like all the other groups there were parents with little kids.
Yes.
And then there was us. Well, there was another couple without kids.
So then once I refrained from raising my hand, two little kids got picked to go up, and I was like, okay, let the children go first. Yeah.
But then they brought the birds around to the crowd, and almost everybody got
There was maybe only 20 people there. So, I mean, it wasn't like a huge thing. Yeah. So everyone got a turn to like put the glove on and have a bird sit on them. But
we saw, there's more than one location in Ireland, and I think what we saw on television was a different location, but we saw on one of these house hunter shows or whatever, this couple going to Ireland to look for a house, and they went to one of these places, and it was just the two of them, these two adults, and they got to have these huge hawks land on their arms. They had, you know, they had the glove to protect them.
I totally pictured you were going to have
that's exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what I was picturing.
I'm like, what?
It was really cool, though.
Yeah.
But as soon as we saw, the little kids were like, well, we're probably going to have to wait our turn.
Be that person and be like, pick me.
But the birds were spectacular.
And actually, most of the trip, we didn't have every single day planned, which that's how we roll. And we had a few ideas of what we wanted to do. When we checked into the hotel in Sligo, we met a woman there, and she's from Sligo, or she's lived in Sligo for 20 years. So she
basically
gave us some
whole life.
Suggestions, which we took up some of the suggestions that she had. Same with the eating in the city, where to go and things like that. So that part worked out.
And, you know, Sligo's a small town, but it's everywhere in Ireland you see the same thing. There's a lot of modern development going on all over the country. There's a big technical university called Atlantic Technological University, ATU, which is right across the street from our hotel.
Should we tell them the funny story? So the first day that we got there, we got there before our room was ready, of course, because we landed, you know, at 6 o'clock in the morning, whatever.
Yeah, right.
So we started to walk towards the town, and then we stopped a young couple and asked, are we heading in the right direction to like get lunch and everything? And like, yeah, or you can have lunch in our canteen in our college.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like, I appreciate that, but I think we're going to find a restaurant, but thank you for the invite.
It is cool because it brings a lot of diversity. Even, you know, we've been to Dublin before. We knew Dublin was a pretty diverse town, but it's cool to see that even in these smaller towns, even pretty far away from Dublin. I mean, you know, Sligo, the town of Sligo is closer to Belfast than it is to Dublin. It's way up there.
Yes.
Although, you know, we say that, but, you know, Ireland is a very small country.
It is. And you look at
it's like the size of Illinois.
Yeah. And you look at it on the map, like, it's a huge country, and it's like, it's not.
Right. But in any event, it was cool to see that, there was a fair amount of diversity. And there are, everywhere you go, there are things to remind you of the Easter Rebellion in 1916 and the forming of the modern Irish Republic. But there were certainly some kind of interesting murals and so forth that we saw up in Sligo. So I don't know if I'm jumping the gun.
Let's jump.
But then we drove back so we were there from May 4th we stayed through the night of the 8th, the night of the 7th, which was a Sunday night, drove back to Dublin on Monday the 8th, because we're going to see Bruce Springsteen at RDS Arena in Dublin on Tuesday the 9th.
Yes.
Now, I have to point out, like in the interest of full disclosure, so I drove from the Dublin airport up to Sligo, and Jennifer drove from Sligo back to Dublin to drop off the car. I will admit, because I'm big enough to admit it, Jennifer did a better job driving than I did. I mean, I think we both did a really good job,
I
frankly.
I think so, yeah.
Frankly.
And for driving the first time, I did drive on the wrong side a couple times, but then...
Never in any kind of
never like
situation.
On a head-on situation until I was like, oh shit, I'm in the wrong... Oops. We'll bleep that out.
Do we know how to bleep that out?
No.
Yeah.
I don't know how to... Then navigating back. But good navigating too, because once we got towards the Enterprise, that was kind of tricky to driving through the city, so getting there, but we made it.
And of course, since it was Enterprise, the person who checked in the car then gave us, then let us climb back in and drove us to the hotel.
That was so nice. Yeah. Because we're like, can you catch a cab here to get back to the hotel? And she's like, I'll take you. And we're like, perfect.
Well, and I was almost thinking, you know, because it's Enterprise and, you know, they're sort of known for that sort of thing, picking people up and dropping them off and so forth. I thought it might work that way, but, you know, I never rented a car in a foreign country before. Yeah. Well, that's not, oh yeah, that is true. Because the only time we ever rented a car outside of the continental United States was in the Virgin Islands, but that's the U.S. territory. By the way, just as an aside, you know, I drove in the Virgin Islands, where you drive on the other side of the road as well. And but that was, I was driving a car that was designed for mainland U.S., so the steering wheel was on the wrong side. And that was probably more challenging, although it was automatic transmission. Yeah. It was probably more challenging than driving this little car around Dublin. But I think we may have to do two episodes on this because we haven't really gotten to the main part.
Right.
Which is that, you know, we went there to see Bruce Springsteen. Jennifer's had not seen Bruce before. The last time I saw Bruce before this show was in 2000.
I was just going to say, it was in a long St. Louis. Ago.
Yeah. So, I mean, I hadn't seen him for more than 23 years because it was... I still remember it's April 8th, 2000 in St. Louis. Yeah. So
I thought it was amazing.
Yeah. I mean,
way better than, it was probably the best concert I've ever been to. Not because it was in Dublin, but because.
Well, that didn't hurt.
yeah. We were close to the stage.
We were really miraculously close to the stage. Yeah, and that's that was something we weren't into. We couldn't really figure out why we got so close to the stage. I really still don't know, but I think there's a couple possibilities. One is that when we bought the tickets, initially they had only announced two shows in Dublin on the 5th and the 7th. So it was a Friday and a Sunday night. So we logged on to the Ticketmaster Ireland website. We got in the online queue, and then you're just stuck there for a few minutes. Well, it was more than a few minutes. I said we were waiting for a few minutes. That's not accurate. But in any event, we were waiting in the online queue for a while, and we didn't realize they had added a third show while we were waiting. That was the Tuesday, the May 9th show. So it's possible we were among the earliest people to get tickets for that show.
It must have been that.
Well, either that or we got there kind of early. I mean, it was a little confusing because... This show started at 7 p.m. The gates opened at 5 p.m. But they said in all the various different emails we got, it said things like, you know, it's in a residential neighborhood, so we're going to not let people queue up long before the show.
And then so you couldn't, like, get there at noon to, like, be...
Right. And so when we actually got there, we have to talk about our adventure getting there, but when we actually got there, we breezed right through the gates. There were
5 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, I think it might have been less than that. Yeah. I don't know. But in any event, when we got into the other side, you know, they checked our tickets. We went through the gate, and there was a woman handing out wristbands, and she said, "Do you want a wristband for the pit?" Now we knew we had general admission seats, so we knew we were going to be on the field of the stadium.
But we didn't picture, like, where we would be.
Right.
I pictured, like, the middle towards the back.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, especially because, you know, it's general admission. Obviously, it's first come, first serve. But so we took the bands. Although I did say to the lady, I go, "We're kind of old. I don't know if we're really up for the pit." And she's like, "Take the wristband." So we did. At any event, we got into this narrow area in front of the stage. I think we were like maybe 10 yards from the stage.
Yeah. And when we came in the stadium and then saw where the stage was and we're like, what is happening right now? Of course, we had to wait 2 hours standing, you know, until it started. Right. Which
including about an hour in the rain.
Including an hour in the rain. And the whole time we kept on saying, or at least to ourselves, we're saying that we're not leaving to use a bathroom.
We should call up, since we were in Ireland, we could have called up the Guinness people. I think I set a world record for someone in my position for not using the bathroom for over 5 hours.
Because it would have been so hard to get back because it was just crunched and you'd had to like get out and then come back in. So luckily we got to stay together and stay in our, get our position.
But how did we get there?
We got there on a double decker bus, which was my one of the things that I wanted to try. And I was so excited because there was a space on the upstairs part, which of course I wanted to sit at. We sat towards the middle of the bus. This woman in front of us was coughing so hard.
No, she was right next to you.
Oh yeah, she was right next to me.
She was sitting, we were across one another, across the aisle from one another, and she was next to you.
Yeah. And it was just like, oh my gosh.
Coughing up a lung.
All of a sudden, people who were at the very front got up and went, and I said to David, I'm like, let's sit at the front. So we did, and it was like super exciting to like kind of be so high up and like see everything, like you were the bus driver.
Right.
And then we ended up getting off probably maybe three blocks before
the... Right. Well, we saw people getting... First of all, the whole way from the hotel to the stadium, we saw people walking.
Yes.
And, you know, so we figured... In the end, we figured it was about 3 miles... 3 miles from our hotel, excuse me. This is the danger of recording after eating dinner.
And then we... when we looked at the bus directions, it said 25 minutes. We're like, oh, that's no problem. So we got... Thought we'll get there at 4, you know, get there by 4:30, whatever. But obviously that didn't take into account the traffic. So it took almost an hour to get there.
Yeah, it took a long time. And there were people that we met waiting for the bus who were also going to the show. And we saw them get up and get off at a certain point. And we're like, all right, we're going to do the same thing.
Yeah.
So we walked the rest of the way. But
which actually was great because I bought a poncho.
That's right.
Because I had a jacket, but they were selling ponchos, which I thought for sure would be like 30 euros or something like that. It was 5, so that's perfect. And I got it, and it rained about an hour.
Yeah, when we got into the actual physical stadium, the sun was out, but you could see dark clouds coming from the opposite end of the stadium, not where the stage was, but the other end. And, you know, I'm looking on my phone. All day I'd been looking on the phone. We were supposed to get a little bit of rain. First it said around noon. And then it was like 2 in the afternoon, then 3 in the afternoon, then 4, 5, 6. So it did come probably around 5:30-ish maybe. And at first it was light and then it picked up and picked up. But I'm looking on my phone and it's like, you know, it was supposed to end. And you could see clearing skies.
You could.
Coming, you know, you could see clearing skies in the direction of where the rain had come. So it did blow over probably a half hour before the concert started. And I had a good jacket that had a hood on it, and you had the poncho. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, you know, we knew when you go to an outdoor concert anywhere, but especially in Dublin in May, you know that's a possibility.
100%.
So you just, and we just said, look, it is what it is. We get rained out, we get rained out.
Right. And we're here.
But
then leaving the concert, we'd ask the hotel, is it hard to get the bus back? And they're like, no.
Nah, no problem.
And but what they didn't know probably is that they blocked off the street for like 5 blocks where the masses of people were just walking down the street to just exit the stadium and everything. By the time we got to the first bus stop, of course, there was tons of people there. So we're like, let's just keep walking. And then we saw a bus pass that was filled, obviously. So we just kept walking. And we just kept walking, and we made our way back to our hotel. Yeah. So we ended up walking the whole way back.
And Frank, I don't think we another bus ever passed us.
I don't think so either.
The other thing that was weird is that the first bus stop we came to was in sort of in the middle of the block, but I couldn't figure out how a bus could have gotten there without like having coming down the street on the other side and doing a U-turn. So I wasn't even sure how that was going to work because...
And it was a beautiful evening.
It was a really
It was
nice
like
evening.
Not cold at all. So, I mean, walking, we walk a lot, so we don't care. But it was just kind of funny that we just kept on walking thinking we'll jump on the bus sometime. And it's like, well, we're almost there, so we may as well just walk.
Well, and then we came on a hotel and went and used the bathroom in the hotel. And we're like, well, now we can do
that's
whatever
our big,
we want.
That's our big tip. If you're traveling anywhere, if you have to use the bathroom, find the nearest hotel, use their lobby bathroom, which are fantastic facilities.
Yeah, beautiful facility. A flush like a jet engine. Yeah, so that worked out well. Now we're almost running out of time, and we haven't actually talked about the concert.
I know, so we'll have to bring that back.
We can do that.
Yeah.
We can do that. I will. So the couple of little things about the show itself and some controversy surrounding the tour, not to be controversial, but there were some issues with ticket pricing in the U.S., where just by way of background, they announced the European shows first for some reason, and the tickets went on sale for the European shows first. And that's partly why we ended up buying tickets in Dublin, because we thought, as it turns out correctly, it would be a little easier to get tickets overseas, and we wanted to go back anyway. But then when they announced the U.S. shows, which actually began in like late January, early February of this year. So in other words, there were U.S. dates before that occurred before the European dates. Then there became this whole controversy about this sort of value pricing scheme that they came up with, where some of the ticket prices just absolutely went through the roof. I understand why people were unhappy with that. I get it. I can only say that that didn't happen, at least with the Dublin shows. So I don't know why they did it differently in the U.S. not, but we paid like 130 euros a piece for the tickets. And I know, I mean, that's a lot of money. Let's be honest. It's not night out.
It's not $2,500 a ticket or something like that.
You could go out to dinner in New York City and spend that much on a dinner. Now, you'd get a great dinner, but you wouldn't get a Bruce Springsteen concert.
Yes.
So, you know, so there was that. The other interesting thing, and we'll talk about the actual show itself. A lot of people in the U.S., before he headed over to Europe, a lot of people in the U.S. were complaining about the set list and saying that he didn't change it very much from one night to another. Now, I got to say, I don't really quite understand what the complaint is. Because unless
you're... Are you going to every show?
Right, that's right, that's right. I mean, unless you're going to more than one show, who cares?
And if you were like, I heard this before.
right. But we'll talk on the next episode. We'll talk about what he played in the set list. I will tell you this as a sort of a preview. I thought it was a really good retrospective of his career. He did not play very much from his various like solo records, like the stuff that came out in the late 80s and the 90s. And we'll go into that in some more detail about what he did and didn't play.
And also, Patti Sciarra wasn't there.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what that was about. But in any event, he concentrated, and I guess it kind of makes sense. He concentrated on albums that he made with the full band, with a few exceptions, which we'll talk about next time. But I have to say, you know, again, I understand that there was a controversy over the ticket prices. I got to be honest with you, you know, while I empathize with people, I looked at this thing as maybe a last time to see him perform. I mean, who knows?
You don't know.
You don't know whether he'll retire from touring. But even beyond that, who knows whether we'll ever get the chance, even if he tours for another 10 years. So, you know, it was kind of a last chance opportunity. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. But so I don't feel overly guilty about having gotten the tickets. And as for the set list, and like I said, we'll talk about it more, but I just feel like it was a pretty good representation of his career. And, you know, that's kind of what the point of this was.
Well, and as a first-time concert goer...
you've been to concerts before.
Yeah. This is my first time at Target.
that's a different story.
Seeing Bruce Springsteen... It wasn't like there was any song that I was like, oh, I'm mad that he played this song. I mean, I didn't know what to expect. So every song was as great as the next one.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was great. And I've seen him. This was the fourth time that I saw him. I saw him in 1981 on the River Tour when I was in college. I saw him on the Born in the USA tour in 1984, I think, in Chicago. I saw him in St. Louis in 2000, and then this time in Dublin. And I have to say one last thing before we, and there is a Canadian radio personality music guy called Eric Alper, who's very well known on social media. And every so often he posts a question. He'll post a lot of the same kinds of questions, but every so often he posts a question that asks, what's the farthest you've ever traveled to go to a concert? And finally, I could say.
We went thousands of miles.
Chicago to Dublin to see Bruce. And I posted a picture. It was my crowning achievement in social media. Anyway, we'll get more into it next time.
Yes, and we got lots more to say.
I got many, many other thoughts on the trip and on Ireland and on Bruce. So
until next time, thanks for watching.
Yeah, or listening.
Listening.
You can watch. You can stare at your computer and watch the little thing go by. Anyway, sorry. We're just a little slap happy.
Yeah, good night.
Good night, everybody.